Moon Unit Zappa is the daughter of musical visionary Frank Zappa. She has just written a memoir of growing up in her unconventional household in 1970s Los Angeles, coming of age in the Hollywood Hills in the 1980s as the Valley Girl, gaining momentum as an accidental VJ on a new network called MTV, and finding herself after losing her father, then her mother, and the testing of her most important relationships. How can you navigate life as the normal child of an extraordinary creative? What is it like to live in a hothouse of individuality that on one hand fosters freedom of expression and on the other tamps down the basic desires of a child for boundaries and affection? She looks to answer those questions in the new book, Earth to Moon, a memoir. Moon Unit Zappa will be at a Golden Notebook event being held at Mountain View Studio in Woodstock, New York, this Sunday, October 13th at 1 p.m. in conversation with Martha Frankel. And it is a great pleasure to welcome Moon Unit Zappa to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us. What a great pleasure to have you on the program.
Thank you so much.
I'm very excited that you're coming. I'm very excited about the book. At what point did you say, I want to share elements of my life with people?
Well, growing up, I was always asked, what was it like growing up with Frank Zappa for a father? And I always felt that it was Gail's story to tell. Gail and Frank introduced me as Gail and Frank from the time I was very small. So Gail being my birth mother, because she was the adult, so-called in the house. And it wasn't until her death and subsequent requests post-mortem that I thought, wow, I need to take a whole fresh look at my upbringing and make sense of what she set in motion. Because essentially she said that Dweezil and I could never have anything to do with the intellectual property of my father, and that only our two younger siblings had that right. And she also said in the will that if any of us found God, that none of us would get the what was left for us. So this just absolutely blindsided me. And I just, for my own sanity, I thought I have to just go spelunking in hell here and figure out, were these signs always there? And as you see in the book, yes.
So these are questions you were asking for yourself more than anything else.
Yeah, I mean, originally, as I started my healing process, I thought about that idea of post-traumatic growth, where you help other people in the same way that you've been, you know, injured. And so that was part of my impetus. But as I started working on the book, I realized I had to get myself steady and get right with me before I thought I could really help anybody else. And so this book was the process of me reclaiming myself. The title Earth to Moon, Gail would say Earth to Moon when I was little to kind of snap me out of spacing out. And later she weaponized it. And then I wanted to take that back and say, this is Earth from my perspective. So that's how Earth to Moon became the title.
You said a moment ago of how this just caught you out of the blue. And I'm curious as to, given what you grew up with and given the situation and the bullying, especially from your mother, that still becomes a surprise.
I know. That's what's so wild about growing up and being loyal to the people that you care about who aren't loyal to you. It is a very strange dynamic that only people that are in these situations opposite people who parentify their children really understand. Because I can see how if you're a healthy person, you're like, why don't you just leave? Why don't you just run away? Why don't you just start your own life? But it wasn't like that, because we had such a close-knit family and we were conditioned to really see ourselves as the Musketeers or some kind of bohemian Kennedys or a royal family of sorts, since my father was considered a genius. And again, that's what I explored. Is genius worth the collateral damage to the rest of the family?
And correct me if I'm wrong, but you almost become part of a brand, right?
Yeah, I say that these kinds of invisible injuries can leave a mark. Mine left a trademark because that's right. I grew up in a family business. It was, I mean, literally boxes and records and CDs and liner notes and artwork, and this was just part of the furniture.
Your father passed away in 1993, but you write in the book about having always sort of feeling that you were distant from him, and both physically distant and emotionally distant. What was it? Obviously, he's out, he's doing his thing. So what are those moments when you are together like?
Well, let's just say it probably wasn't his choice. He probably wasn't thinking in those terms, and it certainly wasn't my choice to have that kind of distance. He was a traveling musician who toured 9 months out of the year sometimes, and he was so dedicated to his art form exactly as it expressed itself through him. He didn't do drugs, he didn't drink. He was a purist, and he was only following his own creative urgings. And so that was more fun than filling a lunchbox, for example, and making
Right.
sure we got to school on time. And so the moments that I had with him, because when you were with him, he made you feel like you were the most important person in the world. And so, of course, I crave that kind of connection at all times. And so you just have to grab it when you get it. And so in some ways, I'm the luckiest of the four of us, the siblings, because I actually did get to spend technically probably the most time with him and have a few chances to have creative opportunities with him.
You did not have a similar relationship with your mother.
I wanted to be close to Gail. I would go to therapy and I would say, "How can I have harmony with this rageaholic who's so sad about my father's cheating?" And I would describe circumstances that I write about in the book, and the therapist would invariably say, "Run for your life. She's a malignant narcissist." And I would say, "Oh no, I must have told it wrong. Let me tell it again and tell you what I did to upset her." And they would just say, "No, run for your life." And I couldn't accept it. So I would change therapists thinking, "Oh, they just don't understand. They don't know." And I had empathy for Gail always because I saw how Frank treated her, and not I don't think out of cruelty. It's just that he just was focused entirely on his huge contribution to the planet, and that was his first love, was his creativity. And that's why I say the book is about is genius and creativity. Is that worth the collateral damage? Because when I hear that somebody's genius, I'm thinking, whose back are they standing on? Who's literally getting the groceries? Who's writing the checks? Who's making sure that the refrigerator's running? Things of this nature, do you know?
So she is feeling this disappointment and then is taking a lot of this out on you and your siblings, and you're really the one that's closest.
I mean, again, I'll never know. My speculation is that if my father gave anybody any attention, it was less love for her. And I think I certainly felt that way myself. I was jealous of fans. I was jealous of whatever groupie he was with. And so then from Gail's perspective, she had that. Plus, for whatever reason, the way her wiring was, she had that jealousy for her own children. And it's unfathomable to me as a parent because all I do is make sure my kid has a better experience than I did. That's how she processed things, and that's how she addressed things.
Moon Unit Zappa is our guest on the roundtable this morning. The name of the new book is Earth to Moon, a memoir. Give me a sense of what it was like, the production of Valley Girl and that, because for many of us, that's what we knew of the relationship between you and your father.
Yeah, I mean, I was an example in Linda Goodman's Sun Signs, that very popular astrological book from the 70s and 80s. And my father and I are an example of a compatible Libra Sagittarius combo. And so that's how much people kind of cemented our connection together. The only other father-daughter combo out there at that time was Debbie Boone, Pat and Debbie Boone.
Right,
So,
Pat and
given those alternatives, I think people had a special fascination for my father's and my relationship. And what's hilarious is when I turned the memoir in, I didn't have any of the Valley Girl stuff in there. It was an absolute blind spot for me. I didn't realize how painful that period of my life was. I left it out when I turned the first draft in, and so that was interesting. It was some of the last stuff that I wrote about.
What about it was painful in the sense of at the time, and something then that you would restrict wanting to dip into to tell people about?
So many answers to that. I think one of the main things, it was a moment in time when there was so much tension between Gail and Frank. There was my inner life, my family life, and my outer life that I was juggling. And then having compassion for Gail and frustration at my father, because this was a time when he was actually thinking about leaving Gail for another woman. And so all of this stuff was happening in real time. Plus, I had crazy cystic acne. And I tell I mean, I think a story that I think people are outraged by, where I receive a package, a gift from the woman that my father is seeing at the height of the beginning of all of this. What ends up becoming basically me riding shotgun down an avalanche of just craziness, like show business, here we come. And I'm just trying to do my geometry homework.
Did you were you at ever were you ever lured in by it? Did you find an allure to show business?
I didn't think that there was anything else that I was meant to do. I mean, that was the export of the town we were living in, Los Angeles, California, Hollywood Hills in particular. And so he described himself as an entertainer. And I can't even say it was a lure as much as it was just a given.
One of the parts of the book that will just rip your heart out is the scene where you're talking to your dad and he's in bed dying, and you're trying to bring some peace to all of this, and he shuts you down. He says, "I'm just too sick to do this." I can't imagine feeling of that for him wasn't worth it, and also that he wasn't interested in resolving what you felt you wanted to resolve.
That was a catastrophic loss and betrayal and shock to my system. I really didn't know you could die before you die, essentially. That somebody could say, this is as much as we'll ever know each other. Not a family member. I mean, breakups and that sort of thing. And even that is just terrible. But when it's your own blood, it's again, as a parent, it's an unfathomable circumstance. And yet, I understood that that tracked in terms of how he lived his life and how he exited this world.
And you, of course, feel, you write about this in the book, you, of course, feel that you have a lot to apologize for at that point.
Yeah, I had when you're in a home where there's no communication in terms of your emotions, you could curse as much as you wanted, but if you had a feeling, that was verboten. Yeah, when you're in an environment where somebody's not making sure that everybody's getting the same information, that you're all on the same page, you're left to use your imagination and again, do kid math and think, well, if no one's spending time with me, I must not be worth spending time with, and on and on. So it's very easy to blame yourself and also the benefit of blaming yourself is that you have some control over something. Otherwise, you're just powerless, and this is a arbitrary crime against humanity that you get saddled with a circumstance that just doesn't feel like love. And so it took me a long time to understand that that other people are responsible for their actions. I always thought, if I, like, how fast can I, if we blame me, now can we move on and have connection? It was just a mechanism in me to try to keep generating harmony as the oldest.
Fast forward to 2015, and Gail is ill with lung cancer, and you have a similar dynamic of wanting to write things and to say things that need to be said. That didn't happen because you felt she was too ill to really kind of take what you were wanted to give her, right?
Yeah, I mean, when Gail was at her most vulnerable, even though she had been very difficult, a difficult person and a personality, an archetype more than a parent, I still felt that it would be a cruelty to just roll out the scroll and be like, here's a list of all the ways that you. It didn't seem right. And I really felt like we had both come to a mutual kind of understanding, a kind of namaste, that we just were naturally not compatible. And I really thought that that was where it was going to end. And that's not what happened.
And this brings us back really to the beginning of our conversation, where she's asking you for forgiveness, but you're not even 100% sure what she's asking for forgiveness for. And it isn't until she passes that you realize to the depths of what she has done to you.
Yeah, and that was again a big shock to me, that when she asked for my forgiveness, and she didn't apologize, let's be clear. She asked for my forgiveness, but she didn't totally come clean about what she was asking for forgiveness for. And so, of course, logically, I thought, oh, it's everything up until this moment. And of course, I gave it to her. You don't want to see a parent suffering, even if they've not been the loveliest to you. You don't want to see anyone suffering. I mean, they say hurt people hurt people, and that's not true. Sick hurt people hurt people. When people are hurt, they don't want anyone to go through what they've been through. And that's my opinion, and that's the experience I had with Gail. It was a big shock when I saw what she had set in motion. And to this day, I mean, again, I'll never know. When she scribbled that little thing on that piece of paper and she handed it to me and it was completely illegible gobbledygook, I mean, maybe that was her saying all the things. I don't know. It's just, I try to write the story like a police report, and I think it sometimes reads like science fiction. And I hope that you found it also funny at times.
Very
But
funny.
I really tried to take the fire of my feelings out of it. I mean, I let myself write the, infinity FU forever draft, but my feelings are something that I have to work on myself. But I wanted to tell a story that showed the complexities of these people as real humans, and everyone's flawed. And what do you do if you love everybody and everyone's flawed?
Moon Unit Zappa's new book is Earth to Moon. She will be at a Golden Notebook event in Woodstock, New York on Sunday at 1 o'clock. You can find out more by going to goldennotebook.com. What kind of relationship then does that allow you to have with your siblings when this wall has been built up?
Well, at the time, we were estranged for 6 years, and I'm still, unfortunately, not in contact with two of my siblings, and that's their choice. And again, I can set a table for the party, but not everyone's going to come, And I mean, I wrote again. I would want to be forgiven and understood, and I would want to have a second chance. And so that's how I live my life, and that's how I wrote about my family. There's a difference between, I'm sorry you feel that way, and I know I don't deserve your forgiveness, but I'm going to apologize anyway. Those are two totally different experiences, and then there's all that gray in between. And if you are not wired to have total honesty with yourself, and it's not interesting to you to explore every nook and cranny of yourself, then there's going to be a less deep experience that is, for me, heartbreaking. But I'm not in charge of everybody. If I were, it would work out a little differently.
And you'll never know, I guess, if what your father would have thought of the arrangements of the will and the breakdown and how that turned out which I guess is even clouded more by the final moments that you had with him.
Yeah, I mean, we do have a document that states what he wanted, which was for all of us to have an equal share of whatever was left in the pot and to get out of show business. Because he really, at the end, he wanted a headstone that said too little too late. He really suffered for his art. I don't think he saw himself as a success. And he really wanted to have people love his material exactly as it was. He didn't have AM radio airplay until he and I did a collaboration together. And he saw his peers writing songs that were probably less interesting to him having more success, and that was that he was an artist, and that's painful to see.
How do you see him now? I guess is it possible, and I'm sure you had to come to terms with this in writing the book, but of what his legacy is to us, the general public, versus the legacy that he has for you and those closest to you?
Well, again, what I always thought was bizarre was I always saw Gail as incredibly devoted to Frank and always championing him and everything that he did. I mean, there's a vault that still hasn't probably it's like 1/22nd worth of material's been kind of brought to light, and there's so much more to share and to give. And so when she didn't honor his wishes but said she was doing it in his name, that didn't track for me. And so I in terms of his legacy, I mean, I am thrilled that Universal has the intellectual property now, and they are enthusiastically making sure that the material gets out there, and stuff that hasn't been heard and stuff that needed to be remastered. And I think they do a really great job. The weird thing is normally when a parent dies, you start to forget what they look like and what they sound like. And that is not my life. He continues and he continues. And it's very strange when your new daddy is a corporation.
And that is very strange. I mean, there's no way around that. But you're not upset by the fact that, in other words, you have an interest in that, in what is being put out within your father's name. That still is something that you're curious about. You haven't shut that out.
Well, at the end of the day, the Venn diagram overlap is that we all wanted and still want for Frank's music and his ideas to be in circulation for his current audience and for younger audiences. And he had so much to offer, and he continues to have so much to offer. And Dweezil's out there playing the music. Amit's making sure that the machine keeps going. And Diva, in her own way, she also shares stuff on her social media, and she's an artist in her own right. And everybody has, we're all a piece of him. And that lives in us. And we all are, I think, expressing that respect and that love in our own ways. I mean, my book isn't I hate my parents book. This is a book about, wow, these are complicated people and these are complicated circumstances. And then I threw in some stuff that I hope, again, makes people laugh about how that kind of upbringing made me drift into and be susceptible to situations that other people would not be maybe fall prey to.
So two final questions. One is, when your name is Moon Unit Zappa, people have expectations of you. And I assume they still have expectations of you that perhaps are not in line with your expectations for yourself.
For the longest time, I was really trying to live up to those expectations, even though I don't even know what they are. It's just trying to guess right. What do they need me to be? Because, you know, people are literally getting LLCs in my name and naming their pets and their babies and their stud llamas and their lighting rigs after me. And I didn't want to end up in rehab and have them be like, oh no, my business shuts down because it's associated with this person who's failing at life. And so I had to, I'm a late bloomer in that sense of saying, you know what, what everyone thinks about me is really none of my business. It's my job is to like me and honor my creativity as it's expressed. But when you have a parent that's so larger than life, who has 100 albums in 53 years, I squeak out one book in 4.5. I have to adjust my expectations.
And final question, did you share the book with your siblings? Have you heard anything?
I have shared the book. Amit is the only one who I believe has read it, and he loves it and he thinks it's really funny. And his only complaint was, why did I talk about our father's so much? He was just going, la la
Yeah.
la, sticking his fingers in his ears. You're my sister, don't talk about that, which I found hilarious.
You can understand that. That's a valid criticism, I guess, right? Sure. Well, the name of the new book is Earth to Moon, a memoir by Moon Unit Zappa. And Moon Unit is going to be in Woodstock on the 13th and in conversation with our friend Martha Frankel. You're going to have so much fun. Do you know Martha at all?
I don't. I've just like watched a couple of little things with her, and she seems like a dream.
She's a pip. You'll have a lot of fun with Martha. It's been an absolute delight talking to you. I hope you have a beautiful and wonderful event in Woodstock, and I thank you so much for sharing with us this morning.
Thank you so much, and thanks for your thoughtful questions.
Be well. Thank you very much. Again, Moon Unit Zappa's new book is Earth to Moon, a memoir. Moon Unit will be at a Golden Notebook event held at Mountain View Studio in Woodstock, New York, on Sunday afternoon at 1 p.m. You can find out more information by going to goldennotebook.com, goldennotebook.com. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.